We tore the tarry rope to shreds with blunt and bleeding nails. We rubbed the doors and scrubbed the floors and cleaned the shining rails. And rank by rank we soaked the plank and clattered with the pails. We sewed the sacks, we broke the stones, we turned the dusty drill. We banged the tins and bawled the hymns and sweated on the mill. But in the heart of every man, terror was lying still.
Chestnut Tree looks cold and bare. They're pitching the tents in the field for the autumn fair. They're brushing the path of the leaves that fall. The ringmaster shouts, come on, come on. The children come in the bitter cold to see if it's true, the stories that they've been told. And now that the fair is in full swing, you would not think it autumn for the feeling of spring. For children laugh and the people dance, and the leaves keep falling without a second glance. I wrote that poem about 18 months ago. It's about a tree on the outside of the wall here, and we have in the exercise yard. It's a chestnut tree. And you see the top of it. And that's what we do see it when it changes, you know, in autumn and spring, what have you. And I've been watching it for the last 3 years. Never wrote poetry or short stories or anything until I came into prison. And I find that it's a great way of, you know, helping to, kill the boredom of prison and just help me out. And it gives me something to do in the cell, you know, for the long time of period that we do be in it. You're fairly limited within the prison itself. So these are ways that you express yourself. And you can only do it when you come to this school. So, you know, it does help you to be able to write a bit of poetry or short stories or something. It's an escape.
Mountjoy is a difficult place to try and run an educational establishment because it's a huge prison. It has the atmosphere of a station platform, people coming and going all the time. Our students are not settled in a class for a great length of time. We come in on a Monday morning and we never know whether the students will be there that were there last week. This is very frustrating for teachers. It cuts off the development of relationships of trust between the student and the teacher. But they have tried to cope with it in different ways. For instance, we've, over the last 3 years, been running short courses rather than catering for academic, leaving cert type courses only. We've decided that we have to put different types of program on, where somebody only has to spend 6 weeks on a certain area and then he finishes that and can move on to a second course where he can see an actual result in 6 weeks. So teachers have developed courses suitable for Mountjoy. We cover the full range of academic subjects that are done outside in secondary schools, but we also cater for prisoners who have a problem with reading and writing. We're very aware that a large number of the people in Mountjoy do have a problem. Maybe that they were able to read a newspaper to find out the results of a football match, but that they have problems in putting sentences down on paper and they feel that their writing is not very good or that their vocabulary is very limited. So a lot of our English classes deal with trying to improve their written English. We cater for most of the academic intercert and leaving cert subjects, for instance, English, Irish, history. recently the Open University was brought into the prison as an option. So we have a couple of people who started off this year to do a sociology degree with Open University. But the area I think that's gone very well this year in Mountjoy could be called the creative area. Over the last 6 months, one of the teachers has developed a drama class where the prisoners write their own material with her help and then put on the play for a prison audience, and that's gone extremely well. Also, there seems to be more satisfaction in the students doing music and art, where they see an immediate return on their efforts. Because Mountjoy is such a busy place and people are coming and going, those three areas, the music, the drama and the art, have been very successful in the last year.
Well, Pete, where are you off to? Robbing the old gas meters, I suppose, eh?
Meters? What are you talking about? The only meters I know are parking meters.
I wouldn't know about that. Now half the meters down around Ballybock are gone missing.
Ballybock's not my manor.
You've no manners.
Go on out of that.
Pete, I'm warning you now, and I give you one warning only. If another meter goes missing in their own damn flats, you're for it. Now go on, get out of here.
Find drama very interesting. Very time-consuming is what we're trying to pass time in here as an asset, you know. It's very entertaining for the fellow inmates, self-satisfaction. And you tend to develop art that you would never search for outside. You know, thanks to Liz, the teacher, she sort of put it to us and we all developed, as we call them, our little talents, you know, and hopefully they'd turn out well. It's an essential asset in socialising. Like, people, obviously, everywhere in the world have bare grudges against one another. But a play like this brings everybody in here together. The so-called hardened criminals become very friendly. You know, I don't mean over-friendly. I mean sociably friendly and a bit of slagging and a bit of this. In general, to get on well together. Plus, the prison officers that was involved in the play. Like, there was a lot of running around to be done, and one prison officer in particular, Mr. Small, he went, to no ends to help us out. You know, running around here and there, where ordinarily you would have to go and get permission for this and permission for that, just to go across onto another wing. You know what I mean? A lot of security-conscious guards wouldn't allow that. But Mr. Small, knowing us in the drama class, and, like, obviously trusts us because he knows us, our character, we're only into entertaining everybody, you know. I'd like to think that I have the development within me to be brought out, but it's a great place for developing one's talents, if that's the right way of putting it.
I like playing music. I think everybody likes to play music, you know. Some people can't do it, but if they'd like to be able to do it, they could, you know. I'd like to go professional, everybody would, you know, but it's not an easy thing to do. It takes a lot of practice, and then again, you have to have the best of equipment if you want to make a lot of money out of it, or even if you want to make a living out of it, you know. You have to have the best of amplification, the best of musicians and all that, you know.
Well, I'd be happy enough with just get the guitar in the house and maybe with a few friends and that. I'd be happy enough like that, kind of old sessions in pubs and that. But I wouldn't care about getting paid for it as long as I could do it and enjoy kind of doing it. I wouldn't like to do it for kind of just to make money and not do what I want to do, the kind of music I want to do. I'd rather have it as a hobby and work maybe as a 9-to-5 job rather than see it go that way, you know.
Thank you. If one has a good ear for music, then they would find it quite easy to pick up from giving them a tape recorder and playing the actual tune they would want to learn. On the other hand, people who would be more interested in the aspects of reading, there are a couple of students who are very, very good and have taken it quite serious and who would be quite capable of doing insert music, such as the history and the actual music itself. The most popular instrument in the prison would be the guitar, because they can have the guitar in their cell. Now, there are a good few students who would love to have, such as the accordion or the piano, but that is not feasible. They just can't have it. So, I mean, the only time they would get for practice is when they would come up here in the morning time, when I would have a bit of free time. In here, they have the opportunity of being able to develop the knowledge of the actual music itself and the history of music. I mean, they're very interested in it, let it be rock or let it be classical. Just because they're prisoners in here doesn't mean they're any different than us outside. They still have the same interest in music. Then the opportunities are not as easy outside in so far as getting classes, because they're quite expensive. Classes are expensive outside for music. Again, it depends on their circumstances. If they're in a financial position, yes, they could have classes outside, but most of them wouldn't. You know, I mean, I would feel would maybe 10% would continue in such a way like that they could form a group, like one or two have actually formed groups outside, and they're going on fairly well, you know. It's terrible to see that it just ends here. I mean, if they get the release, that's it, because they don't really have the incentive when they go outside, because they're caught up in other aspects of their lives, so they sort of discard the music. But in here, they absolutely love it. Mm. Because, I mean, between the music and the art is another thing which is extremely popular. So, I mean, there's no follow-up to that either. And they are two particular areas that brings out an awful lot in individuals in the prison, particularly the music and the art.
I've been coming here now for the last 3 months, isn't it? 2 months. 2 months here now. And before that, I didn't do much in the line of art, but I'm getting into it seriously now. And I'm trying to learn how to use watercolours properly. And I'd like to develop my own style, as such as painting mainly animals and carriages, anything that's got to do with horses. I'm trying to choose one media at a time, and watercolours is what I like at the time, at this time now. This class is about the best opportunity that I personally have here in this prison at the present moment, because it's a good outlet for creativity. As working in the cell, you can't work in the cell with watercolours because the light is wrong. Now, you're not getting any much daylight coming through, and you can't work the proper tones with the electric lights. So it's mostly sketching and drawing, pencil drawing and ink drawing that I'd be doing in the cell. But I'd kind of work out in my head in the cell what I'm going to do. And once it's planned out, once I have an idea, well, I try to do it when I'm coming to classes in the day. It opens your eyes. And it opens your eyes in a way that you look at things in a different way, that you really see, you know. You can see fetches, different tones. You're much more inquisitive into details, and it's great because it opens up. I feel that you miss out a lot of this world's beauty beforehand, and now it just comes into focus. Like, you know, I grew up in a country where there's beautiful scenery around, and where there's actually a lot of people painting. And you're reminded all the time of art in the place, because there's exhibitions all the time going on and this. But I didn't come to it very early, you know, but I always had a good sense of looking at nice things, you know.
Well, I think education is useful in a prison because it takes the tension away in lots of situations. It helps to create a stimulating atmosphere for the prisoner. I'm not saying that it does it all on its own, but it should be used in partnership with other things that are going on in the prison to create a much more creative atmosphere for each prisoner, so that he is given choices about what he would like to do when he's in prison, and that he's not left vegetating. There aren't half enough activities for a prisoner while he's in, whether he's doing 6 months or 6 years. Again, we're fitting in with current buildings, which are very much out of date, which haven't got basic facilities like toilets or hot water, you know, and the pressure that's put on to bring about changes in facilities. We need to be constantly looking for new rooms. If we were to cater for 400 or 500 prisoners, we'd need a new school. But I'm not sure whether there is a current urgency to change the situation. Education is not seen in an urgent way in the department. It's not seen to be an area that needs looking at immediately because of the pressures probably from other agencies. Although in lots of cases you get great cooperation and you get a willingness to bring teachers in, to bring educational people in, to bring visitors in to improve Mountjoy. There is a great willingness apparent now to change things for the prisoner in Mountjoy. But old attitudes still exist. And there is a mistrust of outsiders. There is an unwillingness on the part of some to bring in something that's considered maybe a danger to security or something newfangled, you know.
Is there any way, for example, that you'd like to involve officers in some of your activities?
Oh, yes. I don't think we can do anything without the cooperation and the support of the officers. I think as long as they're aware of what we're trying to do, you know, they'll be willing to help. And if you haven't got that cooperation, you won't get very far. So that's absolutely necessary. Because they are the people who work with the prisoner day in, day out, and nighttime as well when we've gone home. They're the people who have to cope with all the little things that we don't know about. We're the 9-to-5ers. And they have insights that we don't always have. But on the other hand, they have to understand what we're trying to do. I think they're in a double bind where they are in charge of security and they are told that they have to look after things like the locking up and the letting out of prisoners. At the same time, they're told to get to know a prisoner. So you can't be a complete and trusted friend to somebody if you are also the one who has to tell him you're being punished for something you've done, I'm now going to lock you up and I'm taking away your privileges. So they have a more difficult situation than we have in lots of ways. We are dealing with adults in Mountjoy. And this brings out a completely different way of teaching. You know, the whole philosophy behind what we're doing is different from teaching in a secondary school or in a primary school, because we're dealing with adults on a voluntary basis. And they are interested and put their name down to go to class. There is absolutely no compulsion on them. So we know beforehand that these people are willing, interested students.
As governor of Mountjoy Prison, I certainly feel that education has a very important positive role to play within the prisons. I believe that over the last 10 years or so, tremendous strides have been made in the development of educational facilities within prisons, and particularly in places like Mountjoy, where you have to have certain criteria laid down because of security and because of the type of clientele that we would have in prison and held in a prison like Mountjoy, that would to some extent inhibit developments in such things as educational programmes. However, I think through the cooperation of everybody concerned, tremendous strides have taken place, and I would certainly see and look upon education and educational programmes as playing a very important role within life in Mountjoy. I would feel myself that the concept of education still in prison is too narrow, that the focus is very much on the academic type of education and academic type subjects. And I think that we haven't really got to grips yet with the main educational needs of the vast majority of the prison population, which I would identify as being more social type of education and very basic fundamental education. I think a lot of people come into prison from deprived backgrounds with very, very little social education and very little appreciation of the value of social education. And for that reason, I believe that we should be focusing a lot more in on the needs of the prisoners. I think we need to research and to analyse what those needs are and then to respond to the needs of the prisoners. I think at the moment, while it's not altogether true, that at times we're inclined to respond to the skills and the expertise that we have, for instance, in the educational arena, in other words, the teachers that we have. We try to facilitate the educational programmes to suit the expertise that we have, rather, I think, than looking at the needs of the prisoners and responding more to their needs. Very basic education, literacy and numeracy is still very much underutilized within the prison, because a lot of people, while they can be read and write, they certainly have a very low standard and they need a lot of personal tuition. I think a lot of prisoners pass through the net in Mountjoy because of the lack of communication and because of the lack of assessment and evaluation. Through shyness, because they're not interested or they're afraid or they don't want to admit that they need remedial type of education. And for that reason, I think a lot of people are not getting the service that they should be getting. They should be encouraged to go to education. They should be helped and supported in coping with it, because I think for people coming from the backgrounds that they come from, that they find it very stressful to go to education and to learn to read and write. And I think, as well as that, I must say that the facilities available in Mountjoy, particularly for education, are absolutely, totally inadequate, Victorian-style facilities. And until such time as we provide better facilities, well, then education will never reach its full potential. But the whole concept of bringing in outside people, by and large, is a good one, that because it does sort of keep some contact with community outside, which is very much lacking within prison generally, because most people are closed behind high walls and closed doors in prisons and forgotten about. And therefore, I think it is very important that prisoners keep contact with society outside, and that's one way of doing it. I think that everybody working in a prison, whoever they are to some extent educators, and they can provide education, because it depends on what you're talking about. A lot of people coming into prison simply don't know how to go about ordering a meal in a restaurant or applying for some social services or whatever, simple basic things that we all take for granted. And for that reason, I believe that any person that had the benefit of normal education on the outside can help to impart some of that knowledge and expertise to prisoners. So what we're really talking about is a big team effort where everybody would work together to provide the best possible services, and education is obviously one of those very top priorities.
It's a special class, and it operates sometimes once every 2 weeks and sometimes twice a month. And the people who run it, are teachers, and they learn us, how to go about helping people who have difficulty in reading and writing. And there is a lot of people within the prison who have this type of problem. Some of them do come to the school for help, some of them don't. The people who don't come to the school might be getting some help from people within the prison. And it's really, I find it a
sad case, especially being in prison like that. They can't read and write, because if, like, we come down from the recreation hall at night time, well, I can go into a cell the same as a lot of prisoners can, and we can pick up a book and read it, or a magazine, or sit down and write a letter home. Whereas these people come down, they can't do this. You know, they have to listen to music or do some type of physical exercises, or they might be doing some hobby work in their cell. But they can't do anything in connection to reading and writing. To find it more easier, I think, to approach one of their own, like me being a prisoner as well as them, than, say, to come over to the school. Like, because these place somewhat more trust in the person involved, you know, like there's other people like myself who help these people, and they would seem to place more trust in the sense that, well, if I go to another prisoner, well, I mean, it'd be kept down to a very low profile. But if I go over to the school, well, various people would see me going over there. Do you know that I have a literate problem? And I don't want these people to know this. So by turning to one of their own, they get help. And we do what we can for them. You learn them how to read and write. You have to learn them both. I mean, you can't learn a person how to read and then just go up from there. I mean, you have to know his writing difficulties too. And that's generally the way we start. We organise a class, and all of us in the class are people who are training. And we get some help from other people who already teach other prisoners by going into their cells at dinner time. And they're there for an hour and a half, and they're giving these people exercises and seeing how they progress from the previous week. Some people, when they come into prison, like take up help. And when they go out, some of them do go to night classes, but a majority of them don't go to the night class, because, which is understandable, because when they get out, some of them have problems, like they're married and have to get a job then and look after the kids, so that's understandable.
A friend got me a job. I started working on Monday morning at 8:30. The first thing I did was to get a key to the canteen and put the boiler on for the tea. Then I'd get my notebook, go into the workshop and go around asking the men what they wanted at the shop. Because I was the nipper, and I had to write down some of the things in the notebook, but I could not read or write. So if someone wanted 20 senior service, I would put down 20 SS. If someone wanted 20 major, I would put down 20 M, and so on, and put their name or initials and money beside it. It's that way I got to know their brand of smokes and orders. At the end of the summer, I had to go back to school. I was called over to the head office by one of the bosses, called me in to the office. "Jerry," he said, "Mr. Cooney has a job for you. Would you like it? It's better money and it's a good job." I asked him about the job. It was a timekeeper. I could not tell him. I could not read. He said, "Very well, Jerry, what do you think?" I could not tell him. I had not got the heart. So he tapped me on the back. "You will get on fine," he said. "Try doing crosswords. I learned most of my knowledge from them." "Okay," I said. "Well, I'll take the job." "Will you start on Monday morning?" he asked. The job or the site was in RTE. I got passed into RTE. For 3 days I was there by myself in a little office with a paper and pen, hoping a miracle would happen and I would be able to read. I went over the headlines, but still I could not read. Some people would say, "It will come to you someday," but it will never come, I thought. I went out of the office and saw one of the men. He was the ganger man. I got on with him, so I told him in a sort of way that I could not read. He got the message. He told Paddy and I lost the job. When I went into the job to get my money, the farmer told me the lady in the canteen wanted me for a job in the kitchen. But I was sick of working and I did not go. I think it all boiled down to reading.
What do you think about that, Gerald?
I think it's a very good story. You know,
it's not based on a true story.
Well, go on, chill.
Yeah. Yeah.
It looks that way.
I used to have the same problem, but it's not the same, you know, similar problem. About me reading, afraid to tell people. And try to, you know, when somebody's doing something, you're doing it with them, you won't turn around them and say, well, I can't do that. Because you won't tell them you can't read.
Can you give us an example of when?
An example, like, gone messages, right? And he'd say, read out the, maybe gone a message for his mother, he'd say, read them out to me, will I get them? You know, and you won't say, well, I can't read that. You say, well, I have a basher, right? You seem to be getting them all mixed up.
Well, I think when I found out there were so many people, right, with the same problem, right, then I hadn't got as much fear. I thought it was only a few people in the world, say me and another fella, who was in my class, right? So then I began to say, understand life more. I'd ask more, right? And I think I used that as a bit of an excuse as well for not going, played up with it, yeah? But most of the time I had it, I was in hospital for a few months, right? So when I went back, school didn't matter to me. I always had the impression that I was going to make it in life without school, you know.
Did you ever sort of regret that you missed out on school at some stage?
Say when I was 14, right? I think it would, if I hadn't been anyone else, I would have had a nervous breakdown about it. But, you know, school really played up then. And then having to leave to go to, say technical school, and then going to face all that, going to teachers and all, and I had to be brought down by the school inspector to go to it, you know, because it wouldn't have went with embarrassment. And you had to go in and explain that to them. You had to have an examination, you know, to see what class you were in. And I ended up in a class, right, where something similar to this, everyone was a robber in it, and made money or something, you know, it was mad class, but we got on well.
And would the other kids make fun of you, do you think, if you couldn't read and write?
Yeah, they wouldn't make fun of you in front of you.
They wouldn't be
on your back. See, there's another thing, I was listening to Jerry and Noah. See, with the masters, they give you homework. I mean, you can't do that homework. You can't turn around to the master, but I can't do that, so. Because he'll probably give you a tug or a little thump saying, well, I might have been telling you this past hour. You say, do the homework. And when you come in and you haven't got your homework done, then you just stand up and you get a smack of a stick or something. Because either you didn't know how to do it, you had the wrong answers, or you didn't do it. That's why you didn't come into school most of the time.
Yeah.
So I saw the master throwing the kid through a window. Because he embarrassed the kid. The kid started crying in front of the master, right? The master was giving out to him, putting him down, you know, about his family and all, and the kid felt bad and he started crying. So the kid ran at the master. They hit him back. The master picked him and threw him through the window.
Getting back to this reading and writing, I think is very useful, you know? Because, I mean, reading and writing is a part of every job, like. You go into the shop, you must be able to read, you must be able to tell customers, I mean, they'll hand you this, you must be able to load it, you know, able to read them. It's a part of every job. I mean, my reading 12 months ago, I mean, couldn't understand what I was saying, you know? I hadn't the faintest. But since I came into prison, I've learned a lot, I think.
And you can read, right? It means that you're taking in more and you can express yourself more and relate to people. And maybe that's another thing that I like, say, in life. And I found that out of, say, more mature, say, inmates, when you talk to them, they have a different attitude in life. And say more understanding. So I think you have to accept things, and say reading and writing is just another thing, isn't it? But I think if I could have read and write, I lost some pretty good jobs, right? Because I couldn't read, right? Say, I was offered a job, right, as a hall porter. And the only reason I couldn't take that because I couldn't write down who to call in the morning out of rooms, right? And I couldn't do nothing because I had no confidence, because I couldn't work, couldn't read.
I could have got a job as a printer. I was offered a job and I had to turn it down. I didn't tell him I couldn't read. I just said, nah, I can't take it. And an embarrassing situation, I've been in loads of them. I told you, Fiona, I was in with my girlfriend, right? And I broke her off for her because she's going to college now. She's going to college. And because I didn't have the reason, I broke her off for her. You learn through embarrassment. The more embarrassed you get, the more you want to learn. All I'm afraid of is when I have kids, I'd have nothing to offer them. Because I don't know how to read, so I won't be able to help them be able to read. You know the way a father helps his son? Or when you read a nighttime story, he has to read or something.
Would you make sure they go to school?
No, you can't make sure. You can only, you know, ask them to go to school, that you should go to school, but you can't make them go to school. Or you couldn't be made go to school.
Would you be able to talk to them, do you think, about your own feelings on reading and writing?
I will, yeah. I will talk to them on that. I'll tell them where I was. And if I still can't read, then I'll tell them that as well. And my son helps me to read, fair enough. It's just that I hope I know how to read before I even have any kids.
I think the priorities at the moment are to provide facilities and accommodation for more prisoners rather than to improve the facilities that we have. And I think within community, people would not have a great amount of sympathy for providing more facilities, educational facilities or other facilities for prisoners. The main demand would be to provide accommodation to lock up more people. But I hope long term that people will respond and people will realise, particularly politically, that there is a great need to provide modern facilities to help to provide what I would believe is the right of prisoners, the right to education particularly, because I think as citizens of the state, and when they're committed into prison as citizens of the state but deprived of their liberty, that the state has a responsibility and the onus is on the state to provide the facilities for them to make up for some of the things that they didn't get when they were out in community. And a lot of prisoners did not get the basic education that they should have got when they were younger people. And because they end up in prison, I don't believe that they are any lesser as human beings. And I think under the Constitution itself, it clearly states, and illustrates that we should cherish all children equally. And the facts are that, particularly with the vast majority of prisoners, that we don't cherish them all equally. And they haven't got, for various reasons, the same opportunity as the vast majority of their peers on the outside. And for that reason alone, I think that there is an onus on us within the prison service to provide educational facilities for people. As well as that, I think that, once people are committed to prison, the onus is on us to provide useful occupation for them. And I would see education as being one of the most important occupations for people, particularly for the people that need education. I think that you have a tremendous amount of untapped potential within the prison community and actually a lot of very capable people and very talented people within the prison are often the people that come back to prison most often.
Why do you think that?
I think myself that society itself has a lot to answer for in that case, because I believe that a lot of people who come into prison receive very little actual support on their release from society. A matter of fact, I would say that it is a great disadvantage to serve a prison sentence, that whatever chance they had before they came into prison, they have very little at all when they go out, simply because people won't imply them, for instance, if they realise they have been in prison, when they can select people who haven't had a criminal record. I believe that sometimes they go back, or indeed most times, they go back into the very same social situation as where they came in from. You have people with broken homes, no homes, living rough, no obvious means of support. And they go back out on release from prison to the very same situation. And some of them, we have to be frank and admit, have no option but to rob, to exist. So I think that there's a very big social dilemma to be answered out there as well, and for society in general to tackle it and to try and give some type of support, positive support to people, particularly as people you mentioned, people with talent, who could survive if they had the proper supports on their release.
See, most people that's locked up today, they only know us to need it is help. That's all. Help people who need it. I mean, there's this new law now that you do a government scheme. Do you have to clean up the roads or something if you're going to trouble? Well, that sort is, I know what I'm talking about because it's my first time in. And I feel, it's made me feel hateful because I'm locked up. And I can't help because I'm surrounded by people who do hate, and I have to hate back. When all they needed was just to help me out, I deserve to be in here, like everybody else. But my problem that I had could have been helped if someone was willing to help me.